Mr. Forbes, Reel 2. We were talking about your time when you were called up at the beginning of September 1939, and you were, as you mentioned earlier, staying at home in the evening, billeted at home, but you were going in for the day's work as a soldier. What sort of thing were you doing in that first couple of weeks in before you moved off?
We were detailed to go down to Broughty Ferry, which was a local beach, and fill sandbags. We filled sandbags mainly for Dundee.
For air raid precaution.
That's right. We filled sandbags for days, and I can't remember. But it was all, to us, it was all exercise. I mean, we quite enjoyed it, really. And
what else were you doing?
I think we went to Button Ranges to fire rifles.
How were you at firing the rifle?
All over the place. No, I think I was quite a good shot, although I can't remember. You know, you ever seen the army ranges? You know, where the people in the pits and they have all different kinds of signals. Well, there was a little incident happened. Some craft started to come up the river, and the rangers were overlooking the river. And I can remember somebody was firing so many rounds when this red flag came up, and we had to stop firing for this boat coming up the river. These sort of things that we did that week, going down to the ranges. But on other occasions, we formed up in threes and marched all over Dundee, right round the outskirts, and did route marches.
What were the route marches like? How tough were they?
Well, we weren't very disciplined. We were shouting, we were singing most of the time, things like the quartermaster stole, you know, my eyes are dim, I cannot see. That sort of thing. We were, different songs we sang. It was completely relaxed. And I think the citizens of Dundee enjoyed it, because we used to wave that from windows and doors and things.
So after a couple of weeks, then you moved to Kirkcaldy, I believe.
That's right.
Now, what do you remember about that, the Kirkcaldy, move and the period
we
there?
We moved into the Adam Smith Halls, which is now a famous place in Kirkcaldy.
What were the billets like?
It was in a sort of hall which had a stage and even had a microphone, and we had beds all round the hall, and we all lay in bed and put on concerts. That's when I moved in with Nelson Taylor into the store. So being a storeman gave me a lot of privileges. There's excused guards and things like that.
So that's when you were picked while you were at Kirkcaldy. Yeah, yeah. Now, Nelson had picked you as storeman. What was the job of storeman, would you say? What was your duties as a storeman?
It wasn't a lot. Well, anybody came to draw stores of any kind, sports equipment, anything like that. You had to sign it out on a 108 form. And generally attend to anything that was missing, or somebody had lost something, and all these sort of jobs, the quartermaster had to tackle. You also had to help with the pay every week, the pay parade. You were there as an assistant to the QM, handing out.
Was this the regimental quartermaster's stores, that was still headquarters?
Each squadron did its own.
And this was headquarters company. Yes.
It's a long time after that before I went into B squadron.
So, what was a pay parade like?
Pay parade, well, it was just a very simple parade. You had to have an officer who signed all the forms that were what did you call them, acquittance forms, to say that Tupper so-and-so had been paid so much and all that sort of thing that was just done. I had to check, as each man came in, I had to give him the quartermaster his equipment form, and he had the amount for it. A simple job, more or less.
And how did you get on with Nelson Taylor then? He was the actual quarter. He was the squadron quartermaster sergeant.
That's it, yes.
And how did you get on with him?
Very well, very well. He encouraged me a lot in doing things like I had sentence for portraits from people like the rations officer. I think I did a portrait of Sandy Martintosh. I think he came in.
Well, they. What sort of medium did you use? I mean, to do a portrait, was it just?
Most of them were pencil and then pen and ink. I asked them if they wanted it in pencil or pen and ink, and an awful lot of them liked it in pencil. You saw the ones that Jack Warren had. I wondered afterwards whether they would bother keeping them or not, because some of them. They weren't what you call a very good likeness, but you could recognise them barely.
Well, they're caricatures, because people can't see them, and I'm not sure we'll get a copy of that one. So.
No, they were drawings. So,
they're lifelike.
Yeah. Realistic. Yeah. And these are the sort of things that went on in Kirkcaldy. We did cross-country runs and round fight.
What were they like?
Well,
you won't excuse them as stormers.
No, I went on them voluntarily because I was keen on that sort of thing. And Nelson Taylor wouldn't have liked me not to go on them because he was on them. And we, as stormen and QN, we went out individually in the morning, and he believed in going out in PT kit and doing maybe 4 miles or something with boots on. And I wondered how many of the citizens objected to somebody hammering along the streets in boots at 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the morning. Kirkcaldy was a sort of light entertainment.
You weren't there long before you moved up to Leslie, were you?
Were
you there when there was this raid on the
yes,
Fourth Bridge?
Yeah,
what do you remember of that? Because I know
very little. I don't think we knew much about it until we read it in the papers. And there was supposed to be some German shot down, but we never saw it.
So it was more news than something that happened to you.
Yeah.
What about the move to Leslie? What do you remember of that? And what happened when you got to Leslie?
Leslie, I can't see that there was much. Just a simple move, really.
And that'd be October.
Yeah, I think so. What did I say here? November. November was Leslie.
Okay.
Yeah. We got some real impressed vehicles. We had a Bentley, which was the vehicle that we used to go for stores to Mark Inch. From boot prepared in Londres, and it was wonderful driving down these roads in this lovely big Bentley. We also had a Napier Railton, which was a posh car, and I think the officers used that more than anything else.
Were these impressed vehicles?
Impressed, yeah. Commandeered, as it were.
And what other vehicles did you have?
Well,
what about trucks?
Obsolete vehicles. We had an early towing vehicle that had tracks on it. And there's an incident happened with that because this chap called Dick Campbell, who was in the tanks, in HQ, in the tanks. There was four tanks in HQ. And he was one of them, and he was in charge of this thing, and he had left it at the top of this hill. At the bottom of the hill was the gasworks, Leslie's gasworks, and right on the corner there was the employee's toilet, on the right on the corner, just below this hill. So Dick had left something wrong with his vehicle, and it took off on its own and went down the hill and demolished the toilets and the gas works.
And what sort of vehicle was this?
It was like a tractor, but with Caterpillar traps on it. I think it was a sort of one-man vehicle. Yeah. Early artillery towing vehicle. Apart from that, we had very little weaponry. We didn't have any... I think we had some 2-2 rifles. That's about all. But most of the ceremonial guard duty was done with pick shafts.
You've got a cartoon about that. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, it was just a question of needed something in their hands in case the Germans landed or something. And there wasn't any rifles available, so a pick shaft was the handiest weapon that they could get. And that's how we defended the country at that particular stage in the war.
Were you aware of how amateurish it all was at the time, as opposed to looking back, because you became very much more professional, but were you aware at the time that the regiment wasn't that much of a fighting unit, in 1939?
No, I don't think any of us were concerned. We just thought, well, here we are, and we just have to get on with it, with what we've got. And in Leslie, the squadron itself was split up, because there wasn't accommodation to keep the whole lot together. And there was a little hall in the back streets of Leslie that was called the Logan Martin Hall. I can always remember the name of it. And there was a select bunch of fellas slept in there, and they were very often forgotten about. In fact, there was one time when they were never on parade for 3 days. And I can't remember how they got away with it, but they had a 3-day holiday anyway, slept till about noon.
Were you involved at all in the motorcycles? Because a lot of people were learning motorcycles at the time.
Yeah, well, I had one spell as a this is much later.
Okay, well, but not at the time then. And anything else you were doing while you were at Leslie then? Working in the stores?
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a visit from a very nice Highland padre, Mr. Robertson. I can remember him. He used to come around quite a lot, very, very friendly. You felt as one of the boys, Captain Robertson. But he didn't last long, I don't know why, because he was so nice, he had the Highland accent, and everybody liked him. But he disappeared. And I can remember that nearly every time at lunchtime, there was a chap who entertained us with... he was a little sort of, obviously, an agricultural worker. And he sang To Be a Farmer's Boy. Nearly every lunchtime, he was shouted on him. And he could sing this very well. He knew all the words, right, from the 10 verses in it or something. So that was a little entertainment that we had at lunchtime. Apart from that, there was very little went on in Leslie.
The next thing then would be the move to Beaumont Barracks in Aldershot, which was January 1940, I think. And they weren't there long, but what do you remember of that, the move to Beaumont?
Beaumont Barracks had been condemned for years before the war, and they just never got around to demolishing it. So when the war came along, that was needed, you see. So we went down there, and it was a Victorian cavalry barracks, so that all the stables and that were underneath, the living accommodation was on the top. the floors were all pitch, you know, tar, pitch floors in the bar. And so you if you swept the floor, you raised a cloud of black dust. Very often, everybody had a sort of black around the mouth. It was an ancient place, really. But that was where we were introduced to three biscuits. Previously, you had a straw mattress on your bed, but this time you got these three biscuits. Or three square padded things, hard padded things that you put on your bed. And that was the first time we had these.
How comfortable were they?
Not very comfortable, no. I think they've been used by some of the early Victorian armies.
Now, the two things that seem to have begun to get Bren carriers in there, and also begun more Mark 6Bs seem to have been about. Now, what were you on either of those, or were you mainly with the stores still?
Well, I was in the stores at that most of that time, and I actually got a shot to drive. You sometimes got called out to, you know, they tried to make everybody get a taste of every function in the army. And I did get a chance to drive a Bren gun carrier.
Now, what was that like? How did you actually drive a Bren? I mean, how did it all work?
It was normally in a track vehicle, you have two levers to control the tracks. But on a Bren gun carrier, you have a steering wheel, which to turn, you had to sort of jerk it around. They were quite good vehicles. They had quite a good engine, a Ford V8 engine. And they were quite big vehicles, but so exposed, you know, you were wide open. And they had a boys' anti-tank rifle as a weapon, which was a pea shooter.
Did you realise that at the time?
No, we thought it was the be-all and end-all of an anti-tank weapon. But then we didn't realise that the German tanks were made of steel and not cardboard.
And what about the Mark 6B? You didn't get a go on one of them.
No, but we knew about them. They were just tin boxes, really. Not much good. And of course, they were badly armed. There was only a machine gun in them. Not even a two-pounder or anything.
There's a story that they found a tank in the coal cellar.
Right, yeah.
Now, did you know about that, or what? Do you know anything about it at all?
We heard about it when it happened, and we saw it.
What did you hear, and what could you see? Because not many people remember this now.
Well, they're just treated like a mystery. There's all sorts of stories went around about somebody had lost a tank and training or something, and somebody else had this one hid it in the coal cellar, covered it with coal.
And what was it? Was it a Mark 6 or what?
It was I think it was a Mark 2 or a Mark 1. It was one of the old tanks. But you can hardly recognise it. It was just a shell by the time you found it.
It was cannibalised, and they'd taken everything that was any use.
Yeah.
And was it under the coal? I mean,
yes, it had been under the coal. Yeah, it was only when the I mean, this cellar must have been filled with coal before we arrived, and it was only by us using it that it was revealed.
And you actually saw it in there?
I saw it. Yeah, we all saw it. Everyone was an exhibition piece.
But you never knew what the background to it.
Nobody ever knew how it got there.
And you weren't anything else while you were at Beaumont, because you weren't there long, were you? Because I believe they moved out to Farnham and Runfold.
We weren't keen on that. We were at Aldershot. We were so glad to get out of it.
Now, why didn't you like Aldershot?
Too many troops, too many fights in the street. The Black Watch and the HLI, who were antagonists, and you could see fights outside pubs and. You didn't feel like going into a pub for a drink when all the boys were in there. They were just rough sort of soldiers. mean, that was a reputation, wasn't it?
Rougher than you.
Rougher than us.
As Fife and Forth.
We were all nice fellas.
What about the military police? Were they a problem to you? Or
I was on the move round about, yes. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, as long as you were behaving yourself, you never bothered about them. But there were always two of them patrolling around all the time in Aldershot. Because it was a military town, there was nothing else but that.
Now the next thing, which did you Farnham and they moved to Farnham area. Were you actually in Farnham or were you at Runfold?
We were right in the middle of Farnham, a lane called Beer Lane, and there was a small drill hall in there. I don't know what had been used to a small territorial unit or something, but I can remember that in there was a had a new toilet installed in it before. And it was lovely. It was tiled and it was beautifully furnished, and it became the be-all and end-all of duties to be squadron sanity man, because he went in there to the spotless toilet and all he did was polish the tiles and the place was so clean. And talking about Jack Warren, I could remember him coming into the quartermaster store and saying to Nelson Taylor, "Could you get me another week on SSN?" He loved the job because it appealed to his sort of cleanliness, you know. Yeah. Apart from that, you were finished at 10 o'clock every morning and you sat in the naffy for the rest of the day. That's just a little aside. But we had our own cooks at that time, and Arthur Marshall, who was a butcher in City Street, he was a very good cook. So the food was good. You know.
What sort of food would you get?
We got roast beef and Yorkshire pudding sometimes, and we got a good soup. Sometimes we got apple chocolate and stuff like that. I don't know where the apples came from. I think they were gifted by somebody in town. The people in Farnham were very kind, very nice. They had a free canteen where the troops could go and they could get tea and buns and things for nothing. And also there was a Scots couple in Farnham who ran a lovely coffee bar. And of course, us being Scots in an English town, we became favourites in there. We used to go in there quite a lot, get pampered. So Farnham was...
And what about the English civilians? They were generally all right, though. I mean, there was no culture clash, you might call it now.
They loved us, you know.
Were you aware of... They were doing some anti-parachutist patrols on the Hog's Back and that sort of training exercise in reconnaissance using the... You'd be mainly on the stores side at the time.
Yeah, most of the time.
And also the under-19s were posted away there. Did that have any impact? Did you lose any...
Yeah, that was sad. There was a lot of our mates went to that.
Anyone in particular?
Yeah, Wally Fenwick's mate was Arthur Schofield. And he was just 18 and a half or something like that. Just under-19. And he didn't want to go. And Wally didn't want to lose him. But you can't choose in the army. So he went. He went to the North France. And what was the difference? He was killed in Normandy, just like everybody else that was killed there. So we lost four. I lost four. Bill Barry and three others. Charnock. I can't remember the names, but we lost quite a lot of nice fellows there.
Did you get any drafts in?
That was the first English draft that we had.
And how did you, that's the first, how did you react? Because later on you got loads of drafts of English, but how did the first English draft settle in?
Well, I think you were a wee bit antagonistic towards at the start, but not much, because, well, they were all fellas in the same boat as ourselves, and it wasn't really, you got quickly used to them. They very quickly were integrated with us.
So it's just a bit of initial
stuff. Yeah, you did think Eventually, I think there would be about 40 to 60 percent, 40 English to 60 percent Scots. And it might have been less, judging by the number of people in England that we have now that are, you know.
But this was the first group, and at that stage there were you were nearly all Scottish.
Yeah.
Anything else about your time at Farnham? Because you left just after the Dunkirk, you know, the Dunkirk thing, yeah. And then they went off.
While we were at Farnham, the Dunkirk happened, and it seemed to be that the army, apart from, the, I think the Germans could have really invaded, they could have come across and invaded at that time. So the main scare was anti-invasion scale, but the army seemed to, we got a sergeant from the APTS, Army School of Physical Training, you know, and he, his job was to organise recreation and sport. So at the top of the road from Bear Lane there was a lovely Olympic type park and a sports ground. So we occupied that mostly, and that is a time that I could honestly say I never felt fitter in my life. Because Nelson Taylor used to, he was keen on the half mile, and he used me as a pacemaker, you see, and I think I got really fit there. In Hale was the name of the place, just above Farnham. Then it all sort of collapsed when we got this posting to Northern Ireland, so we had to motor all the way up from Farnham right up to Stranraer in Scotland.
Now you were motoring in what? Did you? I mean, had you got proper lorries
Bedford,
by then?
Yeah, by this time we had Bedford to 3-ton trucks, 3,800 weight trucks, and 1,500 weight trucks. We had practically a full complement of soft vehicles at that time.
Now, what were the Bedfords like?
Excellent. I drove one quite a bit. Well, I had a 1,500 weight for a while, and they were great vehicles. Just, well, they served the purpose very well, actually. And we also had Leyland six-wheel, three-ton wagons, which were very good too.
Now, what about the period? Anything about the journey?
Not except that you've heard about the dispatch rider called Bolton.
No, tell me about that.
He arrived home and to a very sad occasion. They were mourning his death. He was supposed to have been missing or killed or something, and they got the shock of their life when he suddenly appeared. He was supposed to be dead. So he was missing for a wee while because I think the army more or less allowed him a bit of leeway because of the situation in his hometown and his family and that. So that was Bolton. That was the thing that happened on the way north. On the way north, he asked permission if he could go and visit his people. And they got the shock of their life when he walked in.
And anything else about the trip?
Not really, no, it was a fairly uneventful trip. One time I was on a 300 weight, most of the stores were in this wagon, and I was on this as a sort of code rider, but I took a shot of it. On the Leyland, the engine was in the driving car, you know what I mean. What we used to do is when we want to change drivers, the driver would slip out the back and the other fellow would put his foot on the accelerator and climb in on top of him, and he would slide out over the back to save us stopping. He couldn't stop anyway. So that's how we used to change drivers on it. And we were busy doing that when we came to a roundabout. Now, a roundabout was something that was few and far between in the country at that time. And so instead of going round the roundabout, we went straight across it, knocked down all the bushes. And that was the only other incident I can remember.
What were convoy driving rules? I mean,
there was constant DRs running back and forward, telling you to keep back or telling you to move up. Sort of thing. Well, you had to keep your distance. The only thing I didn't like much about driving was when you were doing it at night, all you had was a little lamp shining on the differential of the vehicle in front, which was painted white with a number on it so that you would recognise the vehicle. And you had to sort of keep your eyes on that going on all the time.